This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday Sporting Edition of Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Ewart. So coming up, is it time for Fiji to go local on the coaching front for their men's rugby sevens team?
I know Osea Kolonisawa was interviewed and shortlisted, the captain of the Fiji Sevens team that won gold in Rio. He's got a level 3 World Rugby coaching badge. He's one and there are others.
The New Zealand Warriors join forces with Pacific and Māori Rugby League organisations to create more pathways for Pacifica talent.
Rugby League competes, obviously, with Rugby Union for player talent, and we want to be able to push the kids and at least give them the opportunity to develop as Rugby League players as well.
And when she's not picking fruit, Vanuatu international cricketer Valenta Langiatua is showing the men how to play.
This is final. I need to make my team happy, so I just went in and then boom, boom, boom. I just go my strength, hit the ball hard.
She certainly did. More to come from Valenta about her impact on men's cricket in Queensland later. But we start on the news front this morning because the twists and turns since the result of Fiji's election was announced will continue today with the management board of Sedalpa due to meet again at 10 a.m. local time to decide whether their previous vote in favour of joining a coalition with the People's Alliance and the NFP should stand. Meanwhile, the spectre of past coups has been hanging over Fiji after the police commissioner Sitiveni Giliho called on the military for assistance, apparently as a result of reports of threats targeting minority groups. However, Commander Major General Ro Ochone Koloniwai insists their involvement will go no further than assistance and that the military will respect whatever the political outcome turns out to be. Our reporter in Fiji, Lithe Mavono, joins us on the line from Suva. It's been a busy week. Lithe, good morning to you. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Richard. It's good to be talking to you again, and Bula to you.
Now, tell me, why have Sedalpa called another board meeting? They seem to be in a state of utter confusion within the party at the moment.
That is very apt, Richard, and it's confusing Fijian voters and the Fijian population as well, as people struggle to understand why, if agreements had been made earlier in the week and communicated to the President, His Excellency Ratu Williame Katunivere, that an identical event is happening again. But that's what's happening this morning, and what we're told is that now they will address particular issues that the Registrar of Political Parties, who is also the Supervisor of Elections, Mohammed Sanim, had raised. And these were specific questions around the eligibility of those who had voted earlier in the week in favor of the People's Alliance and National Federation Party coalition.
So is it likely, therefore, that the number of board members who vote, we presume at some stage later today, will be less than last time? And there was only a 2-vote margin, so this could be highly significant.
It's very significant, Richard. We did ask, how many people are now kicked off the management board because of eligibility issues. There wasn't anything forthcoming from Sedalpa as of yesterday afternoon, but we are expecting, ahead of this morning's meeting, which should take place in just under 2 hours, to know how many people will be on that board. We do know from earlier questions sent to the General Secretary of Sedalpa, Leonard Asinduru, that even with the people whose eligibility is in question, the board will still reach a quorum. So we know that there will be less people. We do know, however, that the required number of people in order for today's decision to be legal or final will take place.
And yet, as you've already indicated, the general thought was that this deal was signed and sealed. And even late yesterday on social media, the People's Alliance and the National Federation Party were posting tweets, very, very optimistic. They were using the word signed and sealed. So, again, we can't really stress how terribly confusing this must be for the average Fijian voter.
Absolutely, Richard. And yes, you're right. The decision had been made on Tuesday evening, and it was communicated. So signed, sealed, and delivered to His Excellency the President. And the President responded to that, to acknowledge the indication that the People's Alliance, National Federation, and Sedalpa Coalition was now in a position to form the government. And so after that, we'd all been waiting for the President to summon Parliament to sit, which is meant to happen sometime between the 1st and the 3rd of January. However, the General Secretary of SADELPA did go back to the Register of Political Parties, alleging a number of things. One, he alleged bribery, he alleged irregularity in terms of eligibility, and called for intervention by the Supervisor of Elections. So now the meeting takes place today, and we did pose questions to SADELPA to say, you know, the voters are confused, the people of Fiji are confused and frustrated. What kind of assurance can you give us that this time you will check to see the 40-odd people, you know, have the right to be there, have the mandate of the people who elected them to be on that board, and that today's decision will be final? They did tell us that SADELPA's admin people have been under pressure, given the time they were, you know, they were meant to make the decision, but that they've now prepared themselves better. One can only hope, Richard.
And a little added twist in all this is the situation regarding the man who apparently is still their leader, Viliami Bill Navoka. I mean, he was leader, then he wasn't, apparently because it was in breach of the constitution because the party failed to get a majority at the election. So under their constitution, he had to go. And yet now he's back again as leader. I mean, how does that happen?
Richard, I've been on the phone with lawyers this morning trying to get a clarification on that, because you're absolutely right. Their constitution, which is, you know, readily available on the Fijian Elections Office website, indicates that when you fail to lead your party to a majority win, you lose your seat automatically. And then the seat remains vacant until the next annual general meeting, which apparently is next year. And so as far as we understand, he's no longer the party leader. However, in yesterday's press conference, during which SADELPA, for the first time, I think, in this entire episode, showed a very united front and spoke with tones which seemed happier and lighter and more united, also announced that Bill Navoka was still their party leader. We did ask Bill Navoka separately, you know, to explain how that can happen when the Constitution says otherwise. But he also said the very same thing: I am still the party leader. So that's that. A bit more confusion to add to this mix.
And with all this going on, we had this development yesterday, which I suspect a lot of people in Fiji might regard as rather sinister. The police calling in the military, apparently because there have been threats aimed at minorities in Fiji. That's the claim. But also there are claims of splits within the ranks of the police force itself between the commissioner and his chief assistant. I mean, this is not a happy state of affairs, is it?
No, and people are expressing their anxiety, their frustration on Twitter right now. In the Fiji space around Twitter, there are campaigns, there are social media campaigns all across the other social media. In fact, ordinary Fijians taking pictures of themselves doing, you know, simple things, ordinary things, being at the coffee shops, out and about, playing sports, hanging out with their friends of other races, and using the hashtag Fiji is calm and Fiji is united to indicate that, you know, that everything is well on the ground, contrary to what the police are telling us via social media posts. They haven't given us the opportunity to question them as to the details around these people living in fear messages that the police force is pushing out. And so it's really difficult to understand where this is coming from. However, the day before yesterday, Attorney General Ayah Said Kayum did conduct a press conference to say that, you know, people are living in fear of racial violence, that people's homes have been stoned, but all efforts on the part of local media to get details of those reports have not been very successful. We've not had any audience with the police. As to rumors of a split in the police hierarchy, what the rumors are is that the number two man in the Fijian police force, who is also the officer in charge of all police operations, Abdul Khan, I've not been able to get him on the phone to confirm rumors that he has left the police force. And so that's adding to the frustration of the people. But ordinary Fijians are out and about. I took a 10-kilometer run around the three townships that border the capital, Suva, last night, looking for this extra police presence and extra military presence. And in fact, Richard, the extra checkpoints which had been installed for the election period have now been pulled back. There is no extra police presence on the streets, and people are going about the normal business of preparing for Christmas.
And also, City of Rambuka has been regularly posting on social media. I mean, first of all, foremost, he seems very confident that he will get the outcome that he's seeking and that the coalition will be formed. But on this question of why the police have taken this action of calling in the military, he tweeted half an hour ago saying, like an anarchist, Isai Kaum is trying to set the nation alight along racial lines by claiming that racially motivated acts are occurring in Bar. He is lying. That's a pretty extraordinary thing for one leader to say about another on social media. He must be pretty confident.
He is. He held a press conference yesterday morning with his coalition partner, Biman Prasad, who actually led the conference, to say that the optimism stems from the fact that 2 days of deliberations to produce the coalition agreement, which was a deliberation between the three parties, SODELPA, NFP, and People's Alliance, had concluded with, you know, with an agreement now to be presented this morning to SODELPA's management board. So what they're telling us is that everyone is getting what they want out of this coalition, and that there is a document ready to sign. And so that should form, that should be the basis of their confidence going into a parliament sitting when it ends, is that everyone knows what they get out of, you know, voting for Rambuka to be the next prime minister. But yes, it's extraordinary times, Richard. Accusations flying back and forth, allegations of racial violence, but on the streets of Suva, it is very calm and peaceful, and there are Christmas parties happening every night. You know, people are out and about shopping, getting ready in time for feastings and what should happen at this time of the year. But this situation where we're finding accusations of things that we're just not seeing on the ground is adding to a lot of confusion. But people are taking to social media and voicing their frustrations and just refusing to accept messages that we are going through racial violence or any violence of that sort, for that matter, Richard.
Lithe, thank you very much indeed for the update. We await the gathering of the SODELPA board in a little under 2 hours' time, and maybe Fiji will know where it's heading by the end of the day. We shall see, and Lithe, no doubt, will keep us up to date. Thanks again for your time.
Vinaka, Richard.
Lithe Mavona there on the ground in Suva, an increasingly confused situation post-election. But as we say, that meeting at 10 a.m. of SODELPA's management board. Not quite sure how many of the board will be sitting at that meeting, but at some stage, presumably, there will be a vote. And by that stage, we may have a new government in Fiji. But we thought that a couple of days ago, didn't we? You're with Pacific Beat here on ABC Radio Australia for a Friday morning. I'm Richard Ewart, and we change tack now to sporting matters, but still in Fiji, because with Samoa sitting on top of the men's World Rugby 7 standings and Fiji stumbling, to be honest, over the last two rounds of the series. The publisher of Tivovo Rugby Online, Kulden Kamea, has posed a question about the FRU's coaching strategy. The Samoan team have risen to the top under one of their own, former Manu great Brian Lemar, and Kamea, who has a long history in Fijian rugby and rugby league, is asking why Fiji can't go down the same path. While the alarm bells may not be ringing just yet, Fiji sets high standards in the Sevens game, and being outpaced by Samoa will not sit well at FRU headquarters. Englishman Ben Gollings is the third overseas coach in a row to take on the Fiji Sevens role, but Kulden Kamea wonders if officials missed an opportunity to bring in one of the country's sporting heroes.
Something that could have happened prior to Ben Gollings. I know Osea Kolonisau applied and he was interviewed and shortlisted, the captain of the Fiji Sevens team that won gold in Rio. He's got a level 3 World Rugby coaching badge. He's now engaged by China and he looks after and coaches the China women. He's one and there are others.
In that role, he's just led the team to the Asian Championship. But are we not in a position where something along these lines is actually happening? Because Ben Gollings has said there is a succession plan in place and Jerry Tuai is part of his coaching setup. So maybe this is what's going to happen, but just not yet.
Yes, yes. You know, just to scratch the surface a bit, Ben Ryan, when he wrote his book, he made a number of very telling remarks against the former chairman, Francis Keane. You know, as a result, after Ben Ryan, the manager, and Osea Kolonisau, the captain, were moved on very quickly and, you know, it was a clean sweep. And sometimes that's not a bad thing, but someone like Osea could tell you better. And the former manager, Rob Calvesi, would be able to tell you more, but they were swept aside, you know, rather rudely, and especially the manager, general manager of the team, 2016, winning the Olympic Games gold, and suddenly just swept aside. And, you know, we've gone through, of course, now to Ben Gollings, who's, you know, I guess a good coach. I haven't met him. I haven't spoken with him personally. But, yeah, I just felt that Samoa is certainly showing the way with Brian Lima.
Having said that, though, it hasn't happened overnight for him and for them, and they've certainly had their struggles. And there was talk of a players' revolution not so very long ago when they were playing out of Dubai because of COVID, and by all accounts, they were not being terribly well looked after. But clearly, something has changed because there they are sitting on top of the world standings, and Ryan Limar is still the coach. So it's not necessarily a magical solution, is it, if a solution is required for Fiji at the moment, who are not doing so badly, they're just not doing as well as we're used to.
Yes, yes, true. You know, there's so many dynamics at play across the team environment, and especially a very highly competitive series. And as you say, Samoa have had their ups and downs, have had their challenges, had the best coach in the world in Sir Gordon Tidjins, and they didn't really win too much under his time there. But they're playing beautiful rugby. They're playing the best sevens on the circuit, best structure, best efficiency. They're looking really, really good, playing beautiful, pure sevens. And Fiji just not seem to be hitting consistently top gear as we know they can.
Overall, though, do you feel that the situation that the Fiji Sevens team is in at the moment is essentially okay? Because if there is a succession plan in place, as Ben Gollings has clearly said that there is, and the likelihood is that Jerry Tuai could very well inherit the coaching role in 2 or 3 years' time, that will be taking them down the road that you personally would like to see them go.
Yes, absolutely. As long as the succession planning and pathway is open and fair to everyone, that'll give Osea Kolonisao, given his coaching experience now, that would have to place him ahead of Jerry Tuai. With all due respect to Jerry, I believe Osea Kolonisao would be better placed whenever Ben Gollings departs to take over, and Jerry can either be his assistant, get some experience, as just as Osea is getting now. That would be invaluable to the role going forward, and I think that would be a great fit. But, you know, with a ways to go, there are a number of other good coaches around who could easily, given a fair chance, a fair shake of the dice, be up there coaching, you know, be in line or around the coaching scene for Fiji, and female coaches coming through as well.
Do you think perhaps part of the problem, if problem it is, goes back to Ben Ryan and the enormous success that he had? Maybe the feeling within the corridors of power was, we brought in an Englishman, he brought us international success, we need to bring in another international coach to repeat that, which Gareth Baber did under very difficult conditions because of COVID, and now in comes Ben Gollings. I mean, is it a case that the FIU's just got used to bringing in somebody from overseas and getting the results they're looking for?
Yes and no. Take my hat off to Gareth Baber, because he was operating under the most difficult circumstances of anyone. The way it was managed, and they put the team in a bubble, you know, for months. I think it was 8 months leading into the Olympics in Tokyo. And Gareth Baber was in there the whole time, to his credit. So, yeah, he did an exceptional job. I think Ben Gollings, you know, he's fortunate. He's come in, inherited a good setup from Gareth Baber. I'm still reserving my judgment. It's still early days, actually, for Ben Gollings. We know he won the World Cup, which Ben Ryan and Gareth failed to do as well in their time. So you've got to hand it to him. These guys won it in South Africa, against South Africa, and that was a big achievement. But yeah, we've got to see consistency moving forward. We've got to see Fiji winning more. The fans of Fiji can be the cruelest in the world. They're the most passionate about the team, and that also leads to being the most angry when things aren't going right. But they've been rather distracted by the election, so they'll start turning their attention to the HSBC 7 series again come Hamilton, and he'll be under the spotlight going forward in 2023.
Interesting questions are raised there by Kulden Kamea, one-time member of the board at the Fiji Rugby Union, these days prominent in the media as publisher and TV host for Te Vava Rugby Online. Now, an historic partnership between the New Zealand Warriors Rugby League team and the group known as the Pacifica Otoroa Collective is being hailed as the start of a genuine pathway for players, coaches and managers to get their chance in the professional game. The collective is made up of Cook Islands, Fiji, Niue, Samoa, Tokelau, Tonga and the New Zealand Māori Rugby League. And they joined forces in 2021, in fact, with the aim of delivering a stronger voice in creating more career opportunities. By signing up with the Warriors, they've moved up to the next level. And for the smaller nations involved, like Tokelau, Niue, the new deal is being seen as the start of a dream being realised to see young players from those tiny territories rise to the highest levels in the game. Cook Islands national coach Tony Iro, who is also pathways and development coach for the Warriors, says the new agreement is overdue at a time when the Pacific voice in rugby league is demanding to be heard.
Given what's happened the last couple of years, it's probably 24 months overdue, but the way the international game is changing and where there's a good chance that the Pacific nations will have a big say in how the international game is structured and looks in the future, it made sense to see how we could develop those kids to help that progression, and certainly not just the players but also coaches and administrators. So it gives us a link and gives them a link where we can partner up in terms of helping to develop all those people.
So if I interpret what you say correctly, as far as management are concerned, this is about having the best possible setups in the countries involved in the collective. As far as coaches and players are concerned, I guess it's all about pathways and potentially finding coaching and playing talent who could help out at the New Zealand Warriors. But I mean, is it entirely limited to the Warriors? I mean, or are you happy for players to go anywhere within the NRL and coaches too if they can reach that standard?
Oh, yeah. There's only a certain amount of people that the club can have in their systems. And I think for us in New Zealand, there is a responsibility to help develop those pathways for our Pacific people and wherever that leads them. And hopefully it's to bigger and better things, the more the better, as far as we're concerned. And I think what we saw at the World Cup is another Pacific nation stamp their mark, probably the one that wasn't expected to do so. And I can only see that growing over future international seasons and World Cups. So for us to be a part of that, I think it's really important. Our game is, you know, predominantly Pacifica and Māori, probably 98%. So it makes sense that we're helping to develop those nations.
And when you look at the list of countries involved in the collective, the likes of Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, the New Zealand Māori Rugby League, they stand out along with Cook Islands. But then you also have Niue and Tokelau in there. I know there have been one or two players in the NRL of Niuean descent. I'm not sure about Tokelau, but I mean, it's interesting that you've involved two of the smallest nations in the world effectively in this setup. So clearly you feel that there's talent to be found there too.
For us, it's not all about looking for talent. It's important that the smaller countries, Niue, Cook Islands, Tokelau, have an opportunity to develop their people too. So if you look at the big three, effectively in New Zealand, the Māori, Tonga and Samoa, they will have plenty of opportunities. A lot of their players represented well in the other NRL teams as well as the Warriors. But I think as a collective, it just allows the smaller stations who might be probably a generation away or even two generations away from having the same sort of impact. But it's about how can we grow that game of rugby league. And as a collective, we just feel that it was important to involve all the nations that want to participate and also give as many kids the opportunity that we can too. You know, rugby league competes obviously with rugby union for player talent. And we want to be able to push the kids and at least give them the opportunity to develop as rugby league players as well. So at the moment, you know, a lot of our kids are in schools that are dominated by first 15 rugby, and I think this is another opportunity where the young talent gets to pull on their heritage jumpers and introduce, you know, another crowd to rugby league and hopefully keep them in the game.
You mentioned the word heritage there, and of course there's been a lot of debate about that, not least around those players who opted to play for Samoa and Tonga in particular over Australia or New Zealand at the World Cup. But you've made this point yourself in the past that eventually this heritage pathway is going to dry up, isn't it, as we go down the succeeding generation. So therefore developing players, young players in all these places is going to be more and more important. Otherwise teams like Samoa are going to run short of players.
Yeah, and I think with Tonga and Samoa, they've sent that benchmark of providing fantastic opportunities for their players and staff. And like you say, we've got to keep developing that. Ultimately, that's going to come down to the NRL and, you know, the International Rugby League to keep providing those opportunities. But I think the game's got to the point now where Tonga and Samoa proved their mettle in the last two World Cups. Fiji's made semi-finals. They're not far off the pace. For the other nations, they're probably a little far away from that. But it's important that we keep developing and hoping that those nations can one day rise to the levels that Tonga Samoa and obviously the Māori with the New Zealand team have done.
To what extent do you think the development of rugby league amongst the Pacific nations is being held back at the very top end by the muddy waters of State of Origin here in Australia? Because Samoa making the Rugby League World Cup final surely should be ranked higher than they currently are at Tier 2, but there's no movement there, and I think the reason for that is it would create complications for State of Origin.
There's an argument that Tonga and Samoa could run their own Origin series now and have as much commercial success as a State of Origin. So it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. The Pacific Nations will drive how International Rugby League looks in the immediate future and probably long term. So it's going to be interesting to see how those discussions go with those countries and the NRL, the dominant competition in rugby league. But given where the island nations are progressing, it'll be interesting to see where those discussions and where the game ends up.
Well, indeed. Tony Iro, coach of the Cook Islands Rugby League team and Pathways and Development coach for the New Zealand Warriors.
Hold the front page!
Yes, the printing press has stalled briefly to allow for the arrival of Nick Fogarty. Nick, good morning to you.
Morning to you, Richard.
We're going to start off with Christmas coming up in Papua New Guinea. There's been some unhappy times in some of the provinces in recent months, but new laws are being introduced, I assume, to try and have a calm, peaceful Christmas.
Yes. So the Post Courier is reporting that both Moree Bay and Western Highlands provinces have announced a total ban on liquor with the aim of lowering rates of alcohol-fueled violence. The Western Highlands Provincial Administrator Joseph Mungbill says all alcohol shops will be closed by today, with police also keeping an eye on black markets. In Moree Bay Province, the Provincial Administrator Max Bruton says while he understands alcohol was the main revenue earner for businesses, the liquor ban is necessary to ensure that no social issues occur. Other provinces, including the National Capital District, where Port Moresby is, will have a partial ban enforced on Christmas, Boxing Day and New Year's Day.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Now, some good news for some of those families affected by the disaster in Tonga earlier this year when the volcano erupted.
Yeah, it's just under a year since the January 15 eruption on Hunga Tongahunga Ha'apai, about 65 kilometres north of the main island of Tonga Tapu. Some of the people who were affected by that eruption and the related tsunamis were on Atata Island. And now Matangi Tonga is reporting that 22 families from that island are finally moving into new specially built homes at Masilamea on Tonga Tapu. A couple of days ago, Princess Angelica Latufuipeka Tukuahau commissioned and toured one of the site's new one-bedroom units, which were built with funding from the Hunga Tonga Hunga Ha'apai reconstruction budget, and that came mainly from overseas donors and partners. As well as these houses, the Atata Islanders also received fishing boats as a way of helping to recover their livelihoods.
Yeah, it's good to see them, as it were, picking themselves up. But I guess it's sad that they probably will never go home again to Atata. Mm. Now, there's been another chapter in the saga over seabed mining in French Polynesia. So what's changed?
Yeah, last week, the French Polynesian Assembly voted to adopt a formal declaration for a moratorium on any plan to allow seabed mining, with 45 voting in favour of the declaration and 11 against it. Those against the declaration included pro-independence leader Oscar Temaru and his Tavini Huriratira party, and their lack of support led the environment minister to say that Temaru's party didn't support an assembly vote on that moratorium because Temaru had signed a mining contract with China when he was president. Now, RNZ Pacific reports that Temaru has hit back, accusing the minister of defamation and saying his party didn't support the Assembly's moratorium text because it didn't tie mining rights to decolonisation. Temaru says the key issue for his party is that it wants the moratorium linked to a 2016 UN resolution. That resolution urges the administering power to guarantee the permanent sovereignty of the people of French Polynesia over its natural resources, and that includes marine resources and submarine minerals.
Yeah, it's an interesting saga over something which actually hasn't happened yet. But nobody's done seabed mining, and you can't help thinking, well, I do in my simplistic way, that maybe they should try it. before they write it off.
Maybe.
But I don't know, maybe that's a tad controversial. Nick, thank you very much indeed for those updates, some of the news stories making headlines around the Pacific this Friday morning. Pacific Beat. Now we continue on a sporting theme, and all too often in the past we've heard about elite sportsmen and women from the Pacific having to make the tough choice between seasonal work and their chosen sporting career, but times are changing. Recently we told you the story of Vanuatu's international volleyballer Lottie Joe, whose employer not only gave her time off to compete for her country, but he actually built her a practice court. Now that same employer in southern Queensland has turned fruit picker and international cricketer Valenta Langiatu into a sports celebrity in the town of Stanthorpe. Just like Lottie Joe, she thought her playing days might be over, particularly as there were no local women's cricket teams to join. Then Valenta's boss stepped in and found her a place in a men's team, and she turned out to be the star of the show.
Back from home now, there's a big lack of job in Vanuatu, so I've decided to come here to help my families back home, to work and help them with some financial, help them with our financial, and I came here, I did work for the good company, which is I had a good boss to give me that opportunity to play cricket again.
So how did you feel knowing that you were obviously giving up a pretty incredible time being able to play with the national women's team to come to Australia?
Yeah. It's kind of hard for me to let go of cricket, but yeah, I did when I was back home, I've asked myself, why should I go? Because I love cricket, but then I should help my parents to come in and help them with our financial problems. And yeah.
So then how did you feel when you found out that, I guess, your new boss with iComply was happy to support you in doing cricket here in Australia?
I was very happy. I love Rodney. If Rodney is listening, I was like, I don't know how to express how I feel. Happy and appreciate Rodney very much because he did a lot for me. He was a good boss.
Now, the cricket club that you're playing with now is called the Souths Cricket Club, and it's an all-male club. What were your thoughts when you heard that you'd get to play cricket again here in Australia, but that it's with an all-guys team?
Back in Vanuatu, I was playing with the boys also, and then, I was excited to play with them again. I am not afraid because I do love cricket, and it doesn't matter if I did play with the boys. At least I did play cricket. I'm happy with that.
And so when you're playing with them, are you attending training sessions? Are you just going for the games? How does that work?
I did work from Monday to Friday and also Saturday. And I didn't have time for training because after work I was tired. So yeah, I went home, have my dinner and then sleep. Then on Saturday, after work, I would go and play. But I didn't go to training or anything. I just work hard throughout the week. Then on Saturday, boom, play cricket.
Oh, my goodness. So not even any training, just going straight out onto the field for the games.
Yeah.
So with the T20 Grand Final that was happening between the Souths Cricket Club and the Wanderers Cricket Club that you played in, that was the first time that you'd played under the lights, I understand. What was that experience like?
It's kind of hard for me to look at the ball because around the field you can see, like, there's light, but, like, when you look beyond the field, it's black, and then when you go and see the ball again, it's kind of hard for you to look at the ball again.
And also, you're under a bit of pressure when you got to the crease, had to make 17 runs off of 12 balls. How did you feel knowing that?
When I got in, I feel like I can do this. My team needs to win. Like, this is final. I need to make my team happy. So I just went in and I don't, like, just stop the ball. No, I just hit the ball hard. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, and then you brought the team their winning ball. Yeah. how did you celebrate?
They all come and hug me, and I was very excited because it was my first time playing with them. And, yeah, I feel, I don't know how to say it. And then after the game, I went to our changing room and I kept my phone and I messaged our boss. Boss Rodney, we did want to tell him everything. And yeah, I was very happy. I did play it for the company and also to make my boss happy. And yeah, you know, iComply is winning.
How important to you, I guess, is it to have this opportunity to continue playing your cricket while you're here in Australia?
I'm young and back home we still have competitions.
like to go out to other countries and represent our country. So I came here, play cricket, like is to improve my skills with like playing with the boys, improve more of my skills so that I can go back home and then help some girls from my team to get more skills from me so that we can go and beat the PNG team.
Yeah, that's the long-held ambition of the Vanuatu women's cricket team, and one of the star players in that lineup, Valenta Langiato. They've been showing the men how to play in Queensland when she's not picking fruit. She was speaking there to Jordan Fennell. It's Friday morning here on Pacific Beat. It's the Sporting Edition with me, Richard Ewart. And it might not generate the same degree of fervour as the rugby codes or soccer, but supporters of triathlon say its Olympic pathway is providing a shining light for young Pacific hopefuls. So many of them were in Nandi for the recent Oceania Triathlon Pacific Island Championships, where the elite men and women competed in a super sprint in the water, on bikes, and then the run to the finish. Nick Fogarty has been speaking to Samoa Triathlon President Sete Afoa, who says the men's event was won by Samoa's own Jet Lee Curtis after a late call-up from the New Zealand-based star, who finished more than 2 minutes ahead of his closest rival.
We take part in the Oceania Triathlon Union, what's OTU, in the annual Pacific Island Triathlon Championships. And that sort of moves around the region every year. And this time it was in Nandi. We had an opportunity for Jet to join the team very late. I always call up to replace one of our athletes out of Samoa who couldn't travel in the last minute. And Jet is new to triathlon. His parents have been talking to us about Jet becoming interested in triathlon and representing Samoa. And so in the end, I had to ring him and ask him to board a plane 4 days out from the camp and the championships. So that was his first introduction to triathlon. The last triathlon he did was as a 12-year-old in the Weetbix Children's Triathlon. And so that's, what, 6, 7 years ago now. The camp in Nandi that the Oceania Triathlon put on is quite good. So it's a week-long camp of triathlon activities, how to run, how to swim, how to transition, how to ride a bike, how to pace yourself. And so it was a really, really good opportunity for Jet to learn all that. And then from his background as a swimmer and also as a representative runner for his school at Westlake Boys High School here in Auckland, he was able to make up the bike leg and still win the championship for Samoa in Nandi on Sunday.
We've never really talked about triathlon much on our program. Is it a sport that's growing in the Pacific?
Look, it's a sport that it's a marginal sport, a fringe sport in the Pacific Islands, purely for reason of access to what triathlon needs, which is bike and gear, and also having people who can do all three. And that's hard to find in any country, but particularly in the Pacific Island country, it's very hard to find people who can do all three disciplines well. But it is a growing sport in a sense because it's an Olympic sport. Triathlon is an Olympic sport. It's one of those core Olympic sports. It's always there. It's never going to be not at the Olympics. So from that basis, right through down to the grassroots, triathlon gets a boost in a country like Samoa and in the Pacific Islands because there is that pathway to the Olympics.
And I understand that you're something of a big name in open water swimming. How has that kind of, informed your triathlon career? And is that how you got involved in triathlon?
I'm not sure about big name, but thank you. I moved to Samoa in 2012 and started open water swimming and launched the Samoa Swim Series, Apolima Strait Swim, and all other five islands in Samoa. And now we also run swims in Tonga, Tahiti, and also Aitutaki, Rarotonga. So we run a lot of Pacific Ocean swims around the region. And I think I'm the only Pacific Islander that runs ocean swim events in the Pacific. There are other events in Fiji, of course, but they're run by Kiwis and Australians that fly in, fly out after running their event. So I'm really the only DNY Pacific Islander running ocean swims in the region. So, yes, the answer to your question is that is how it started from the swims. And then we found that people were running with us as well in our 10K run in Apia. And then we had the opportunity for World Triathlon to knock on our door and say, we'd like to put triathlon here. Same with Oceania Cycling and UCI. They talked to us and talked to me and said, we like what you're doing. We like to form Oceania Cycling, Samoa Cycling, to associate with Oceania and UCI. So, yeah, indeed, that was a pathway for us.
Sounds like it's going to be a very good pathway as well. The president of Samoa Triathlon, Sete Afoa, speaking there to Nick Fogarty. Remarkable performance by Jet Li Curtis.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Now, time to talk through some of the sporting editions, not just of this week, but indeed of the year, with sports writer and social media forum moderator Tia Rock, who joins us once again on Pacific Beat. So good morning to you, Tia.
Pacific greetings and good morning from the very wet Galawinku, Richard, and a huge Mbulavanaka to our listeners across the region.
Yes, and particularly those in Fiji. Yeah, it's fun times, but we've talked about the politics this morning. Let's talk about some of the sporting matters. And Frank Pulitoa, who's a man best known really as a rugby league player of great note with Penrith, played for Samoa. He was also administrator with the NRL, but now he's jumping to the 15-a-side code with Oceania Rugby taking over as general manager. You know Frank pretty well, I believe, from past experience. What do you make of this appointment?
Yes, Richard. So on Wednesday morning this week, exciting, Oceania Rugby announced the appointment of Frank Pulitoa as its general manager. So this was after following a global search and, you know, unanimous endorsement from the Oceania board. My acquaintance, Richard, with Frank spans over 20 years. He's had an amazing number of years at the NRL, not only as a player, but also as a distinguished administrator, being the general manager for international strategy, and he also looked after the NRL awards since I think it was May 2018. So Frank played with the Penrith Panthers, as we all know, and South Sydney Rabbitohs with over 13 seasons in the NRL. He's a commercially minded executive, and he's led a number of successful programs and initiatives for the NRL, including also working very closely with the Rugby League Federation and the Asia Pacific Rugby League Confederation on reforms towards improving governance and operational standards across member nations, in particular the Pacific as well. So more importantly, one of Frank's most instrumental work, Richard, was the development or the co-development of the NRL's first ever Pacifica strategy, which was designed to support Pacific players in the game, including the delivery of an annual Pacific test program that we've enjoyed from 2013 to 2022. And, you know, Richard, I've worked with Frank, as I mentioned, over a number of years, including the Fiji and Australia Prime Minister's 13s project in the rugby league space. And I can say it's certainly a proud moment to see Frank Pulitoa's journey into rugby. And he begins at the helm of Oceania Rugby in February 2023, Richard. So exciting news.
Yeah, he has quite a track record, and it's going to be interesting to see what he does in the 15-a-side world and the 7-a-side world for that matter. Now, going to take a look at some of the highlights from the year, and I'm thinking that the big one for you is first on the list here, Fijiana. I mean, what they did in Super W and subsequently in international competition, their first ever World Cup win. I mean, it was an extraordinary year, wasn't it, for people involved in women's rugby in Fiji?
Yes, most certainly. It truly was a moment of pride this year, Richard, for myself and a lot of people across the Pacific, I think. And when I think about how Pacific Beat kept bringing their stories to the forefront and was instrumental in uncovering some of the behind-the-scenes difficult conversations that needed to be had on an international level to wake up and prop up the administrators at Fiji Rugby. So in relation to their treatment, the controversy controversial coaching dynamic. We had endless conversations about that and raising the concerns of what Pacific women go through, especially at an international level through sports and with limited experience. So after winning the Super W competition unbeaten, this then led on to Fiji's first Rugby Women's World Cup, also which also brought them their first tournament win. And it was thanks to their heart-stopping win over South Africa that the Fijiana managed to soar up to 16th in their rankings, a massive improvement, Richard, and a memorable journey indeed it was.
It was, absolutely. And that, particularly that game, it was an absolute nail-biter. Now, on the men's front, Moana Pacifica and the Fijian Ndrua, they kicked off in the new-look Super Rugby Pacifica. We waited 25 years, essentially, for the Pacific to be involved in professional rugby. And they didn't do a bad job, did they, considering COVID and all the rest of it?
Yes, most certainly on the back of COVID. Who can forget the difficult entry of the Moana Pacifica into the Super Rugby Pacific competition, Richard? Definitely a team to keep our eye on in 2023. And what about the Fijian Drua and their explosive entry into the scene? So the Fijian Drua was nominated by Last Word on Sports.com as the most well-received new team. They said a few will argue that the Pacific Islands have contributed so much to Super Rugby, it was only fitting that one of the newest sides in Tier 1 domestic rugby was the Fijian Drua. So great news on that end as well, and much exciting times ahead for both teams.
Now, in about a week's time, the Toa Samoa players are due in Apia, where they'll get a very, very warm welcome, I'm sure, from the fans over there after their team reached the Rugby League World Cup final. Meanwhile, their Rugby 7 side sits on top of the World 7 Series. There are still seven rounds, or I think eight rounds to go, but they're on top. It's not a bad time to be a Samoan sports fan, is it?
Most certainly. I know that throughout the year, you and I have talked about how the Samoans were in the top four teams many years ago. And for you, 2022 has been certainly the reemergence of the mighty Manu Samoa Seven side. I'm so proud of this team and their epic performance, especially at the 2022 Cape Town Sevens. They're definitely one of my favorite teams to follow in 23. And Richard, yes, Toa Samoa does it for me again in the NRL space on the back of the discourse in Australia of players playing for their country of origin. I love their underdog story and their rise to the Rugby League World Cup finals, representing really every island nation in the Pacific. And this clearly warmed the hearts of the Pacific and beyond. Then there's the Matatonga fans as well, who, you know, created a moment that spilled over into the Samoan diaspora community, especially with fan base behavior. This was epic to watch, seeing the Pacific celebrate in style and true patriotism for their countries, Richard.
Yeah, it was great to see, and to see a Pacific team in the Rugby League World Cup final was wonderful. It's just a shame they couldn't go one step further, but maybe next time. Now, we can't leave reflections on the year without talking about the Tonga Tala, the remarkable netball team that at the start of the year essentially didn't really exist. The team came together. They represent Tonga. They're all from off island. They had no ranking in the world. Now they're right up there. They're the best team in the Pacific. They've been seeded at the World Cup. I mean, this is an astonishing rise by any measure, isn't it?
Oh, a beautiful story indeed, Richard. Watching the journey of the Tonga women's netball team this year has been amazing. I went last night on Google just to check out their world ranking for the netball team, and so excited to see the results based on matches up to the 10th of December 2022, with Tonga ranked at 8th place. How good is that, Richard? It's such an amazing journey and one that we will continue to watch, no doubt, in 2023.
Yes, it's going to be fascinating to see how they go in the World Cup, where, of course, they'll come up against Fiji again, but they seem to have their measure at the moment. So fingers crossed they'll make it through to the quarterfinals. So, dear, thank you so much for your time this morning and your reflections on the year. And like you, I'm hoping for good things from Frank Politora to Oceania Rugby. It's going to be interesting to see what he does in that space.
Yes, Yes, Richard, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to all of our audience in the Pacific, and a huge Vinaka Vaka level for always having me on the program in 2022. And I will see you all next year. Vinaka.
Thank you, Tia. Enjoy the holiday season. Great to have you on the program. And rounding out this edition of Pacific Beat. So we will be back at 3:05 PNG time this afternoon with Jordan Fennell. And who knows, by that stage, Fiji might have a government. On the other hand, they might not. The situation getting ever more confusing. There will be developments throughout the morning. We'll keep you posted here on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Hewitt, and that's it from the Sporting Edition for 2022. We'll be back with more Sporting Friday morning programs in 2023. Between now and then, enjoy the festive season. Thanks for your company.